Good morning. This is Neil Strausser with the CBS World News Roundup. Once again, the guns are sounding on the outskirts of Beirut as Israeli and Palestinian forces exchange fire. From Tel Aviv, Ike Pappas has the Israeli side of the story.
Israel's ceasefire with PLO guerrillas was broken this morning when Israeli positions south and east of Beirut came under rocket attack. An Israeli army spokesman, offering few details, said only that Israeli artillery answered the attack, which apparently came from PLO positions inside West Beirut. There was no report of any casualties. It was the first time in 3 days that the Israelis have admitted firing on PLO positions, although various Arab sources, including Lebanese radio, have insisted that the Israelis were not sticking by their ceasefire. Meanwhile, Israeli patrols continue to scour the area east of Beirut for signs of PLO infiltrators who have been brought closer to the Israeli lines around the city in an effort to carry out hit-and-run raids against Israeli positions. Israeli commanders say several mines laid by the PLO guerrillas have been found on roads east of the city. Israeli officials blame the Syrians for transporting the guerrillas closer to Israeli forces and warn that if Israeli troops are attacked, Israel would consider its ceasefire with Syria over and would move to end the infiltrations with military action. Ike Pappas, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
In what amounts to a tactical decision, the United Nations Security Council has voted to extend the life of the no longer peacekeeping force in southern Lebanon, the UN Interim Force, or UNIFIL as it's called, for another 2 months. Richard C. Hodlett reports.
The 7,000-man force was swept aside by the Israeli invasion, having neither the authority nor the weapons to resist. Since then, it has been in limbo, unable to move, and not allowed by Israel to engage in relief activities among the wounded, homeless, and hungry civilians in the area. Israel would prefer to see it leave and be replaced by a multinational force containing American troops. But the United States and others wanted to see UNIFIL remain in place because once gone, it would never come back. Extending the mandate is a strictly interim measure, allowing time to see whether UNIFIL can still play a useful role. Ireland and other Western speakers condemned Israel's invasion and what they called its contempt for UNIFIL, demanding that Israeli troops leave Lebanon. Israel's ambassador Yehuda Blum said, however, his country had acted in self-defense and would not leave before concrete measures made Israel safe from terrorist attack. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
China today accused the United States of encouraging the Israeli move into Lebanon. The new China news agency said that, quote, Washington's consistent posture of connivance, partiality, and support is a major factor that has encouraged Israel's outrages in the Middle East. The Middle East is a likely topic today as Secretary of State Haig and Soviet Foreign Minister Gromyko continue their talks, this time at the Soviet UN mission in New York. Robert Pierpoint has a report.
Today, according to the U.S. Secretary of State, they will discuss what he called regional issues, presumably meaning the Middle East and the Israeli invasion of Lebanon, as well as the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and communist repression in Poland. The two men met alone yesterday, except for interpreters, for almost 5 hours. And afterwards, Secretary Haig indicated they devoted their talks to disarmament issues, including the various proposals put forth by President Reagan over the past several months to limit both nuclear and conventional weapons. Haig gave no clue to any Soviet response to the U.S. proposals, only to say that Soviet reactions, quote, were discussed, which does not sound very positive. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News, New York.
For the British, it is to scoff at the latest pronouncement from Argentina that the Falklands War cannot end until British forces are withdrawn. Martha Teichner has more from London.
After beating Argentine forces on the Falkland Islands, Britain has no intention of bowing to Argentina's latest ultimatum. The British government will not lift its air and sea blockade of the South Atlantic until Argentina confirms that all hostilities have ended. Nor will Britain return senior Argentine prisoners, including General Menendez and about 450 officers. The British position has not changed. There is some thought here that Argentina's indication it is willing to fight on may be face-saving propaganda designed for home consumption, that the Argentines will come around as they did over the question of repatriating prisoners. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher is reportedly angry over the Argentine demand that 5,500 Argentine prisoners be taken to Puerto Madryn. It will take almost 2 weeks for British ships to sea-lift the prisoners to this small fishing village, where docking is said to be insufficient for the Canberra and the Norland. If the prisoners had been taken to a southern port, such as Rio Gallegos, the prisoner transfer could have been completed in less than a week. Martha Teichner, CBS News, London.
This is Charles Gomez in Buenos Aires. Diplomatic sources say a letter submitted to the United Nations Security Council stating Argentina would not stop hostilities in the South Atlantic until Britain withdraws all its forces is more of a face-saving gesture for Argentina than an actual threat. The letter condemns Britain's military occupation of the islands, the blockade, and economic sanctions. The source says the letter was an attempt to get the United Nations involved in the cessation of hostilities and to pressure Great Britain into following UN resolutions calling for troop withdrawals before serious negotiations can begin. "We are not in a position to continue the war right now," said the source, "but we wanted to go on record that we also did not agree with the British attitude." Meanwhile, 4,500 Argentine prisoners from the Falklands arrived late yesterday in Puerto Quilla, Argentina, reportedly on the British vessel Canberra, with more prisoners expected to arrive soon on the Norland. Argentina this morning has a new president, although he will only serve for an interim period. He is Major General Alfredo Saint-Jean, who will stay in power until the junta names a president sometime next week. Charles Gomez, CBS News, Buenos Aires.
A strong earthquake shook much of El Salvador today. There are reports of some deaths and damage, but no exact figures. Again today, a jury considers the difficult question of whether John Hinckley was legally responsible when he attempted to assassinate President Reagan. Sam Ford has more from Washington.
The jurors resumed deliberations this morning on whether Hinckley is guilty, not guilty, or not guilty by reason of insanity for the shootings of President Reagan and three others on March 30th of last year. Yesterday, as the jurors filed from the courtroom to begin deliberations, Hinckley was visibly upset. At times, he has displayed emotion when actress Jodie Foster was being discussed, but yesterday got up from the defense table and reached for his parents, who were in the spectator section. The marshals immediately stopped him and led him back to his cell. In closing arguments yesterday, prosecutor Roger Edelman said, "The time has come for John Hinckley Jr. for the first time to take responsibility for his actions." While defense attorney Vincent Fuller had argued that Hinckley's actions were brought on by an insane mind, and he urged jurors to free their minds of bias, anger, and passion. The jury will deliberate tomorrow if necessary. Sam Ford, CBS News, Washington.
Novelist John Cheever is dead at the age of 70. As predicted by Senator Charles Percy, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, yesterday's decision by President Reagan to widen the ban on sale of equipment for the Soviet gas pipeline has proved upsetting to U.S. allies. An example is Japan, as reported by Gordon Joseloff.
The U.S. decision to continue the ban on export of oil technology to the Soviets jeopardizes a $200 million Japanese investment in the Japanese-Soviet petroleum project off Sakhalin Island. Government and industry sources say Japan will now be unable to live up to terms of its agreement with the Soviets. And that means unless some accommodation is reached with Moscow, the entire project could revert to Soviet control with no payback for Tokyo's five-year investment. Japanese officials reacted to the U.S. decision with expressions of regret and disappointment. Government sources say talks will be held with the Soviets as soon as possible to see if terms of the contract might be altered. At the recent Versailles summit, Prime Minister Zenko Suzuki appealed personally to President Reagan to lift the export ban. Japanese officials argued that a negative decision would hurt Tokyo more than Moscow, depriving the Japanese of a nearby and relatively cheap potential source of much-needed energy. Gordon Joseloff, CBS News, Tokyo.
A storm with gale-force winds is moving up the South Atlantic seaboard today. It's expected to bring high seas to the Cape Hatteras area before moving out to sea. From Texas, meanwhile, come Texas-sized stories of hailstorms overnight. The hail in some places said to be as big as bricks or softballs. The fierce storms that sent hail the size of bricks into Texas stirred treacherous flood tides along the west coast of Florida and forced residents of a North Carolina nursing home to flee knee-deep waters. Two people died in that onslaught.